welcome to the Stanley Street Social Podcast presented by MAP. I'm here with Matthew Keenan for our first ever early morning podcast. It's 7:26 a.m. on a Thursday morning.
And it's my first appearance in the social club. I'm in the actual Stanley Street Social Club.
We're in headquarters.
Headquarters, HQ.
Me and Campbell got offered an opportunity to commentate at the Oceania Junior Championships in Tassie next weekend, which is fantastic.
It's road only, or is it track and road?
It's road only.
Okay.
Junior road all the way up to the big boys.
I imagine the elites are there for the Oceanas.
But it's the full spectrum. It's not just pros or, I guess, the track or something specific. It's the full range. First things first. I was going to ask you this anyway, so I thought we'd do it over a podcast. What do we do?
You do your homework, but you can't do too much homework on under-17s or under-19s because they haven't necessarily done a lot. But you guys know Tasmania well, so you've got those opportunities to talk about Tasmania, what a great place it is to ride. And then in many of the races, like the junior races, I imagine there's the under-17s that'll be racing there. There's not a lot of history to talk about with the athletes that are racing. But what you can do is you can look at who's won those races in the past, or who's finished second, who's finished third, and what they've gone on to do. So then that the parents that are standing by the side of the road, predominantly the people that they're there to entertain, because there's not too many others going, you can talk about how this has been an amazing platform and a stepping stone for the next generation of stars to come through, and that it's a great proving ground for the young guys and girls that are out there at the moment. So homework is number one.
So so you're going to Paris Nice tomorrow night.
Yeah.
What have you done for that?
So I scour the internet getting the release of the teams that have been confirmed that their seven riders are in, and then I do my notes on each of those riders for each team. And I have two sets of notes for each race. I have an abbreviated set, which I print out. So I get the entire peloton, 22 teams of seven, on two pages, and I tape those pages to a clipboard, and that is always in front of me for quick reference. So when the break is forming and it's all happening, I've got a quick reference as to who it is that's in there. And then I've got a second set of data for each race, which is expansive history on every rider that's in the race. And then once the breakaway then gets established and things settle down, there's two or three guys in the front of the peloton chasing, you've only got a half a dozen guys to talk about, sometimes less. So you need a bit more information on them. And you gather that over the years. And I've got a permanent database on every rider. And you look for stuff that you can't find on the internet. So when you're at a bike race, you're talking to the mechanic about what one rider prefers. You're talking to the soigneur, the masseuse, the physio, the sports directors, and the riders themselves to find out what they did at school. What other sport did they play? What did their mum and dad do sport-wise? And you gather as much of that information as possible so you can paint the picture of who the person is as the athlete, as opposed to just talking about heart rate and wattage, which only appeals to about 3% of the audience.
So, like, because we were doing our weekly unpack last night and looking at the Paris Nice and Torino start list, not a whole lot out.
No.
What do we talk about?
Well, as of last night, there was only 9 teams that have been confirmed for Paris Nice. So, I have all my research done on those 9 teams.
Do you get extra?
No. I get given the same information as you in terms of, you know, I get the media release from the team. So, I'm on all the databases for the media offices. So their media releases come out. And the Quick Step media release, for example, it came out yesterday. It listed the 7 riders that will be riding for the team and what their objectives are. And their objective is really to try and win some stages. They're not really there with... although they've got Bob Youngles, you know, he's looking for the GC. He looks to win anything, doesn't he?
Oh, so it's got Bob Youngles and what he's doing there.
Yeah.
Like
what his objectives are. Yeah. So you've got a little bit of context. Then come stage one, you know, they're going with Jacobson, they're going to try and win the stages, some sprints. So in stage one, it's a reasonably short stage, 138 kilometres. You see Quickstep at the front chasing. That gives you a chance to talk about what they're trying to do today, but their longer-term objectives. They're also looking to try and get someone on the podium in the overall classification. And I've got that so far for 9 of the teams.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, talking about if a breakaway goes of 2.
Yeah.
I guess a lull period.
Yeah.
Like when we get to the dry stages of, Oh dear, what are we talking about now?
Okay, I'll give you the most the most challenging day in commentary history for Robbie McEwen and me at the Tour de France. It was 2017, the staging of Vittel, which was the day where Mark Cavendish crashed and Peter Sagan got disqualified. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. Lots of news came out of that day. But for 205 kilometres, there was a one-man breakaway with Guillaume van Kiesbroek riding for Wanty Groupe Gobert. He was on his own. And as that break rolled up the road at kilometre zero just about, and he was looking across his shoulder and no one was going, both Robbie and I were screaming at the TV for somebody to go with him, but nobody went with him. And we had a lot of information on him, to the point that a year prior, at the Tour Down Under, his grandparents came out to the Tour Down Under and they were in the car with Robbie. So Robbie had lots of information. Kim van Kiesbroek's grandfather on his mother's side was world champion back in the 1960s. So there's lots to talk about, but not 205 kilometres solo to talk about. They're the challenging days in commentary, so good luck in Devonport.
Is that the worst?
They're challenging. The worst occasions you have is when you make mistakes. And you're going to make a mistake every single day you're trying to achieve something. Every single day you're trying to do something, you're going to make a mistake. But the biggest learning experiences that I've had have been commentating on junior races because they don't have a history. There's not a whole lot there to talk about, you know, this guy or girl has done X, Y, and Z because it might be their first season racing. So there's not a lot to talk about. And it really challenges you and helps you develop as a commentator. The track is good to do that because at least you get finishes pretty regularly. Yeah. So there's something to talk about and you can get hyped up a little bit. But long format races, it's really challenging.
I imagine we're just going to be sitting at the start finish line.
Yeah. So if what you'll probably be doing in that environment, and I've done plenty of these before, is you call them to the start, you know, interview the commissaire to get the information then across to the riders about any of the key rules for the day that or concerns about the course, and then you send them on their way, then they're gone. They're out of sight. It's a circuit race, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many kilometres per lap?
Varies per...
Per race.
Per race, yeah.
Okay. So then once the... So the race goes
away...
We've got
a full package from the time trials to the road
race. Well, the time trials are actually reasonably easy because you call... This is, you know, Alex Clements is coming up to start, 30 seconds to go, and you might have finished fourth last year. Finished fourth last year, hoping to go a couple of places better this time around. On his way, down the ramp, all the best. I'm sure mum and dad are, you know, because you got hear the parents on the side of the road, they're going bananas when their kid's starting. And then you get them all underway, but then at the same time, hopefully you'll get intermediate time checks so you can give updates on who's leading. And then as they come into the finish line, you're just giving the times. Who's at the top? Who's in the hot seat? And then you get athletes in the hot seat and you talk to every single one of those riders that sits down on the hot seat. Ask them what was hard about the course, what the wind direction was like. Who do you think of the riders that are still to come can beat your time?
And you've only got 30 seconds to fill till the next guy.
Yeah, exactly. So the time trials are easier than the road race.
Yeah.
They're more difficult on the telly, but at a live venue, the time trial is easier. And in track cycling, TV commentary is easier than venue commentary. Because when you're commentating on the track at a venue, you can't give the tactics away. For example, it's a two-up sprint, and the guy at the back is giving a little bit of distance to the guy in the front.
Oh, you can't,
yeah. You can't start to know, he's laying off. He's about to make his move because that alerts the person at the front what the tactic is of the person that's at the back.
Yeah.
You can change the influence, the outcome of the race. You can talk about that on telly, but you can't when you're doing the live venue stuff. So the audience knows what's happening, but you can't say it because you might influence the outcome of the race. You got to say it after it's happened.
Because I guess you started doing that track, that junior stuff.
Yeah, because and the reason I know that you can't give it away is I did it once at a veterans race, at a masters race. Commentated, I said, he's backing off. It was a scratch race, I think. Yeah, it was a scratch race. He's backing off. He's about to take a run at them. And then everybody in the peloton has heard this and they've all picked up the pace to avoid that attack happening. And then the guy that was about to launch the attack, he came and gave me some free advice. He wasn't happy.
Have you got one take or the biggest learning out of that commentating on juniors, progressing your career?
Yeah, okay. So, well, in addition to commentating on people that don't have many results to talk about, the people who are listening are the people that really know them. So it's family and friends. So you learn not to say anything ridiculous or try not to say anything too stupid because you get that immediate feedback from their loved ones. So you're a little bit more conscious of that, I guess. But it is where you learn your craft, and it's better to make mistakes in front of a small audience first and build up your confidence and build up your skill set before you make mistakes in front of a bigger audience, so you get thicker skin as well. But the key learning, be prepared. Go in prepared and have information to talk about when there are dead spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, homework is the key, like it is with anything. You can't go to your first bike race without having trained and expect to win.
Mm.
You can't go into your first commentary gig without having been prepared and expect to be good.
Yeah. So, for you, at who are you working for at the moment when you go to these Paris Nice races, when you go to these...
So Paris Nice, I work for ASO.
And are you doing it? You're going to Paris or are you going...
Yeah, I follow the race. So, it's the same format as the Tour de France. So, as anybody listening to this podcast would know, ASO own the Tour de France, Paris Nice, Roubaix, etc. And I do what is the international commentary, the same as I do for the Tour de France. So, during the tour, I'm not employed by SBS. I'm employed by ASO, and a commentary comes into Australia, New Zealand, goes into Canada, throughout Africa, around about 48 different English-speaking networks. Paris-Nice is the same. Vuelta a España is the same as well. And part of that is you've got to make sure that you're neutral, that you're not commentating specifically for an Australian audience, but you're catering for the everybody that's watching, wherever they are in the world, and make sure you don't show any bias. As Richie Beno said, there is no team called us or them.
How do you go with that when Matthew Heyman's going for a victory in Paris-Roubaix?
Not well, yeah. As the video of Robbie and I backstage highlights. Yeah, there's some...
I'm sure there's some exceptions like that. Yeah. Like, this is unreal.
Yeah, you try to be as neutral as possible. But when a guy like Matt Heyman is... going into the velodrome with Tom Bonin to win Paris-Roubaix, it's pretty hard not to at least have a little bit of a bias come through. The advantage of that call was, though, that was only for SBS.
Okay.
So you could get a
wild.
Yeah, without standing like you're the cheer squad. And there's, you know, some people that you've known since they've come through the juniors. Last year, watching Simon Clark win that stage in the Vuelta a España, that's for commentating for an international audience, but... I first commentated on Simon Clark in the under-15s at the Warragul Junior Track Cycling Carnival. I was the MC for a fundraiser for him to go to the Junior World Championships. It's hard not to want him to win when you're in the commentary box, but you still got to try and stay neutral in terms of what you say.
So, would you say you're at the peak of your career now?
No, I hope not, because I want to be better than what I am at the moment.
But in terms of what, where you're at, what you're achieving, what you're doing, like, is there... I guess in the commentating evolution of Matthew Keenan, you've almost got a monopoly now on the stat man, the guru, and then Rob and fit perfectly with Robbie by your side as the race expert.
Yeah, like, Robbie's awesome to work with.
What stone is unturned?
I haven't commentated on the Olympics. I'd love to commentate on the Olympics. Obviously, cycling, I'd love to commentate on. But I really want to commentate on the Winter Olympics. Short track speed skating is like velodrome racing, yeah. Right? That would be cool. And also the long track speed skating, that's kind of like doing pursuits and so on the velodrome as well. I love the idea of commentating on the Winter Olympics.
How do you get gigs like that?
Make contact with Channel 7 or the IOC or whoever's doing the broadcast.
Yeah. Is it harder to get your foot in the door with those mainstream channels?
Yeah, I've done some work with Channel 7, like the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race, and you've just got to be persistent. Keep knocking on the door because they're not going to come chasing you because they've got enough people trying to chase them. And put your foot forward and be prepared to get knocked back and then see if you can go again the next time around.
Does it change much from the smaller channels to the bigger channels?
The process is the same. Yeah. No, it doesn't change much at all. Once you get in, it's really hard getting in the door. And once you get in the door and you can build that relationship with them, a lot of it comes down to whether you're easy or difficult to work with as well. And they don't like to make big changes. And Channel 7, they've used Phil Liggett in commentary since about 92 or thereabouts at Barcelona. And I imagine they'll keep doing that for a while yet, but I'd love to get the chance to call alongside him at the games.
They don't like changes because of... They like the consistency for the audience or...
Yeah, they like the consistency for the audience. And then also for the Olympics, the people who are watching the Olympics. You know, you and I watch the Olympics and we're an expert on gymnastics for 2 weeks. Mm. We're an expert on diving. I was over-rotated, too much splash for 2 weeks. And it's the same with the cycling. There's people that don't even watch the Tour de France, but they'll only watch cycling during the Olympics. And the voice that they know is the voice of Phil Liggett, not the voice of Matt Keenan.
Yeah.
I want that to eventually change, but, you know, I'll keep pushing and see how I go.
Is there anything you can do in that space to kind of, more than just commentating the tour, which I guess is the big dance, which the general punter tunes into, is there anything else you do outside of that to kind of push your voice, push your message?
Yeah, I put together a show reel, which is the commentary equivalent to a CV. Send that to them, try and get a meeting with them, which, you know, I've been doing. When I work for them for Channel 7, say at the Cat 11's Great Ocean Road Race, use that as the opportunity to build the relationship with the people who make the decisions.
Yeah.
Mm. Are you nervous? Are you nervous about commentating the Oceanas?
I don't know. A little bit, I think.
What homework have you done?
I haven't done any homework now. This is my start of my homework. Do a podcast with you.
What homework has Campbell done?
Nothing.
Less.
Well, I assume nothing. He hasn't even done the podcast. He'd be in bed right now, so...
Sleep tight, Campbell.
Yeah, I guess this is the start. And I guess from what you said, we need to...
Well, here's a way to think about it. If you're standing on the side of the road watching a friend race... What do you want to hear from the commentator?
It's one of those things though, that you never really think about it. Like, it's always there, but it's not like... it's kind of like part-time background noise. You sometimes tune in.
Yeah.
You're sometimes talking to someone else.
Yeah. But, yeah, one good way to think about it is what information would you want if you were standing on the side of the road?
Mm.
And that will give you a pretty clear guide as to what you need to be talking about.
I think the your point about talking to your customer, talking to the mum and dads about where this can go, I guess the biggest benefit about being in Tasmania is, one, we're Tasmanian.
Yeah.
And two, home ground advantage. And two, there's so much, there's a rich history.
Yeah.
You talk about Richie Porte all day.
Yeah.
And
silence is really valuable. You don't have to talk wall to wall.
Yeah.
In that format.
I think that's something we'll probably need to wrap our heads around a bit, is when to talk.
Yeah. And get a bit of background music as well. Because, you know, talking and then complete silence, you can hear the tumbleweeds rolling. And it throws you a little bit as a commentator when you're doing venue stuff. So if you're working with the organisers, try and get a little bit of background music that can play when you're not talking. Mm. And, you know, Richie Benno was, you know, he's economical with his words. Mm. Don't talk unless you're adding value to what people are seeing.
Have you got one awkward moment that comes to mind?
That comes to mind? No, I've had plenty. You know, when there's times where you make a mistake and you think, okay, just don't back up over the dead body. There's no need to draw attention to it. Don't make that same mistake again. And sometimes you make mistakes because you're really nervous. You'll stumble over words, stumble over writers' names. Wrong idea of a writer is always really frustrating. That doesn't happen to me too often, that one. But everybody does it every now and then. And, you know, even without making a mistake, you know whether you've done a good job or a bad job. And the days where you've done a bad job are the ones we actually talk too much.
Mm.
And you'd normally talk too much when you're really nervous. So when I started commentating on the Tour de France, I talked too much. It was almost as if it was radio. I didn't let the pitchers tell any of the story. But that was because I was really nervous. Having said that, in my defense and in defense of anybody that's doing commentating for the first time at that level, you don't finish university and become the CEO.
Mm.
You finish university and you work your way up through the food chain. And it's been the same process for me in commentary. I think I'm much better now than what I was 10 years ago. And I hope I'm better again in another 10 years' time.
And on cycling in general, you're going to Paris-Nice.
Yeah.
What are you predicting? What are you thinking? What's your take from the opening weekend of the Spring Classics that we've just seen?
Quick Step's going okay.
Yeah, they're going all right.
They're going okay again.
Have they done enough with their results now to palm off their little mishap with their team boss and his little saga?
Well, Ilio Kayser is riding Paris-Nice, right?
And that's his first race back.
Yeah, after the ridiculous behaviour by him, his team and management at the tour in Argentina. So I was actually thinking about this just last night. Do I mention it if he's in a break? Do I mention it if he's on the front leading someone out? In the same way as when Alejandro Valverde races, every time Valverde's in a race and you mention his name, somebody gives you feedback on social media about his doping past. But you can't mention it every single time. There are times where it's appropriate to mention it, but you can't bring it up every single time he's on the screen. And with Ilio Kayser, I think it's got to be mentioned at least once, but it doesn't need to be mentioned all the time. Yeah. So, yeah, I can't remember what the question was, but that was Quick Step.
We're talking about Paris-Nice, Quick Step.
Well, they've been... The take out of the first couple of weekends, at least in Belgium, was the Quick Step... the same as they've always been.
Same as they've always been.
Yeah, they just keep on winning. They're the benchmark, particularly in the one-day races. It'll be interesting to see what happens at Strade Bianche. I'm always looking forward to that one. But the Paris-Nice is a race that can set up the season for the general classification guys. So how Romain Bardet performs will be really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how Michael Matthews goes there as well with Sunweb. They've got Wilco Kelderman, who'll be going for the overall classification. Movistar, their team's not confirmed yet. Nairo Quintana is proposed to be riding Paris-Nice. And you look at the honor roll of Paris-Nice, and it reflects often the honor roll of the Tour de France. Might be a couple of years on, but, Contador won there, then the Tour. Geraint Thomas has won there. He's won the Tour. Marc Soler won there last year, who I imagine you probably raced against Marc Soler when he won the Tour L'Avenir. And he's a prospect to maybe go top five in the Tour de France the next few years. So I love this as a race, as setting up the season.
Your take on Richie being sick and not racing, how does that fit in his tour prep, do you think?
Really disappointing in my regards, just from a commentary perspective. I love watching him at that race. This is a conversation I've often had with Cadel Evans about how Richie's form has been early in the season. And Cadel's take on this has been, you're better off trying to maintain form than chase form. And getting sick at this time of year for Richie can put him a couple of weeks behind and means that he might need to chase form a little bit later in the year. And although Cadel hasn't won Paris-Nice, he's been on the podium at Paris-Nice, he's won stages at Paris-Nice, likewise at Torino Adriatico, he was always pretty consistent. So it's disappointing that Richie's not there, but you'd rather be sick in March than May or June, and particularly July.
And your take on the Australian summer?
Is it continuing to improve?
It is improving.
It was my first time going to the Tour Down Under and actually working on the race, even though I was just doing 35, 45-minute Q&A sessions in at the village each day. But it is Australian cycling's equivalent to the spring racing carnival in horses. There's people that go to the Tour Down Under that don't watch hardly any other bike race in the season, and they enjoy themselves without hardly seeing any of the bike race while they're there either.
Yeah.
You can go and ride lots of the stages that the athletes are going across. It was a really good summer for me personally. And it is getting better. I thought the national championships were better this year with the inclusion of more of the junior racing and more of the paracycling. I thought that was a big step up there also.
And you're wearing the Baker ID kit.
Mm.
We released our podcast with Andre Lagerche on Sunday. What is your involvement with them?
So, as somebody that gets a public profile, you get asked to do a fair bit of charity work. And I thought, I've got to pick one as opposed to spreading myself thin and doing a whole bunch of different things and not doing anything well. So, the Baker Institute, they've been around for about 85 years, maybe a little bit more. And they do research into trying to reduce death from cardiac disease to heart attacks, essentially, and type 1 diabetes. So, I chose this one is the one that I'd be the ambassador for and support because my grandfather and two of my uncles died of heart attacks in their early 40s. So part of it is self-interest, because I don't want to die of a heart attack either, particularly in my 40s, because I'm now 44 years of age. And I look at the work that a guy like Andre LaGuerche does, and I don't have the intellect to really get my head around it.
Unbelievable.
He's just off the Richter scale genius. Plus, he runs about a 2:35 marathon.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal. And there's more people that die of cardiac disease each year than all the cancers put together. And as you and I have seen with a guy like Bruce Carter, who had a heart attack. How old was Bruce when he had a heart attack? 54?
Yeah. It was a question in the podcast. It was like, what are the chances of that middle-aged man? They train ridiculous and amounts for really what they fit. Could be doing.
Paul Sherwin died of a heart attack at 62 years of age. Really fit. Just really bad luck. And the work that Andre does tries to reduce people dying of heart disease. So this is the one that I've picked to support.
Well, thanks, Matt.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I want an update.
Good
afterwards.
Luck to you too.
Thanks,
not
mate.
That you really need it, but yeah. Well, I will give you an update.